It's At the Letters for Tuesday, December 17th, 2024. Arden's Welling here with Ben Nicholson Smith. Our producers are Christian Ryan and Nick Ondrod. Thank you so much for listening. Ben, you are back from Dallas at the winter meetings. You and Shai down there doing some great coverage for Sportsnet.ca. How did you enjoy this particular round of lobby lingering?
Yeah, it was great. I would say the winter meetings are, I always kind of forget how many people are there. And so, yeah, it's a fun chance to just catch up with people, hear the candid takes, like a few hot takes, a few just, you know, measured takes, but all candid takes from agents, executives, people in the game that you don't necessarily see all the time. It was a good week of conversation, trying to just get a read on what's happening around the league, what's happening with the Blue Jays. And the Jays actually were pretty active with the Andrés Giménez trade, with the Jimmy Garcia signing. So really good week. It leaves us with a lot to discuss.
It is essentially MLB's convention, you know, yes. Because it's not just Ross Atkins and the other GMs and John Schneider and the other managers, but it's like coaching staffs and it's scouts and it's other like underlings from front offices, and it's people who want to be in front offices and be on coaching staffs, and it's dudes trying to sell their latest training tool, and it's like the apparel people, it's the bat guys and the glove guys. It really is just kind of everybody. For like, I feel like it would give you a good sense of like just how broad this industry is and like just how many different sort of sub industries and sub businesses are pulled in to the mothership MLB.
Totally. It is a wide range of people. I heard that, you know, most teams bring something like 50, 60, 70 people.
Wow.
So yeah, it's a huge, huge undertaking. It is a huge convention. You know, it's not just the GMs that you talk to at this sort of event, but like you said, you have managers there, you have scouting people, you have international people, you have analytics people, people who are looking for jobs, people who, you know, work for different teams and I haven't necessarily seen in like 5 years or 3 years or something. And, you know, just for whatever reason, right? Because some people avoid the lobby and you kind of run into a different group of people each year, depending on the configuration of the hotel and where you happen to be at a given moment. But sometimes it's really nice to catch up with different people from the industry and try to understand what's going on. And it's interesting how so many different teams are like struggling in their own way to answer their own offseason questions, right? And the Blue Jays, we're going to get into this. They have their set of problems and it is a challenge that the Blue Jays are up against. They are up against a real challenge. But talk to some other teams and they're like, yeah, we have to find three position players for $10 million or, you know, we have to figure this out. Or of course, there are other teams that are positioned in an amazing way and they know it. But yeah, it's just interesting to hear the variety of perspectives, because a lot of the time I get really, tunnel vision on the Blue Jays, and that's where we should be. That's what our job demands here. But broadening that perspective, I think, is really helpful as well.
Yeah, there's no team out there that's like, yep, we're good for 2025. We're going to win a ton of games and challenge for a World Series. Like even the Dodgers, you know, probably want to add to their bullpen or improve their depth, raise their floor a little bit. I doubt that there's much more ceiling they could possibly add to their roster with the way that it is right now. But, you know, every team like has something to do this offseason. And the Blue Jays certainly have a lot to do. Is it your sense, as it is mine, that the Blue Jays are very much not finished and are likely to make 2, 3, maybe even 4 more moves between now and the beginning of spring training?
They are definitely not finished. So there will be more moves. That is a fact. They are not done. Now, what's going to be really interesting is how big those moves are and what holes they leave on this team, because I don't know that the Blue Jays are going to address all of their remaining needs in a satisfying way between now and the beginning of spring training. We'll see. There are a lot of different possibilities on the table, even after, you know, Juan Soto, of course, a New York Met, and many other players, top players have signed, including Max Fried. So some of those high-end Blue Jays targets are off the board and we can cross them off of that list. Even if it was a remote possibility, we can definitively say Juan Soto, Max Fried, they're gone. They're not going to be Blue Jays. But yeah, they're not done. The Jays continue working. They're not in an easy spot. And this is not going to be an easy, rest of the offseason for a lot of reasons that we'll get into, but they're not done. So that leaves open some intrigue and some possibilities.
Let me tell you something else that I believe, and I'm curious to get your take on. I believe that there is a greater than 50% chance that the Blue Jays have made their biggest move of the offseason already in acquiring Andrés Giménez. Are you with me on that?
I would say I am with you.
And Soto rifles one right center. This is going to split the gap, goes to the wall. Can Torres score? Rojas will wave him home. Throw comes in. Torres is out! Whoa! What a way to start this night!
What a throw by Giménez right here. Watch this gun right here. I mean, no hop, nothing. Wow.
It had to be a perfect throw.
Over under 50%.
Yeah, I would take the over on that. Now, that's not to say it's way over 50%. And I could easily imagine scenarios where the Blue Jays make a bigger addition than Andrés Giménez. You know, could they sign an Anthony Santander? I think they could. Could they sign a Sean Manaea?
Is that bigger than Giménez, Sean Manaea?
Maybe not in terms of total financial commitment, actually.
Even in terms of just impact on your win potential, I might even push back on Santander in that case, right?
Yeah, if we're talking about projected war, they've probably made their biggest addition of the offseason. I would say greater than 80%.
Greater than 80%. Interesting. Because bigger than Giménez, I would see as obviously to me, Corbin Burns, Alex Bregman, I would also put him in that category.
Yes.
Roky Sasaki, I guess not in terms of how much war he'll add to the 2025 roster, but I think just in terms of big for the long term, big for the franchise, Sasaki. And then there's the mystery box of unexpected trade, whether that's Jesus Cesardo from the Marlins or, insert other trade candidate here. So there are a number of options there, but I don't really anticipate the Blue Jays being the ones to come away with any of those players.
Yeah, and we could have full discussions on all of those guys. And I think with Sasaki, you have to pursue him. We've said this before. Of course the Blue Jays are going to be pursuing him. They're probably meeting with Joel Wolf and Sasaki in California this week. And that's when Joel Wolf of Wasserman was planning to hold initial meetings for teams interested with Roky Sasaki. The Blue Jays, who have scouted him in person multiple times with multiple executives over the years, they are sure to ask for one of those meetings with Joel Wolf. And then we'll see what happens from there. I mean, I think the Dodgers and Padres certainly look like the favorites based on conversations that I've had. But if you're the Jays, you have to take your shot, remote though it may be, to sign a pitcher who's 23 years old with that kind of upside.
Yeah, I just think that so with Sasaki, to me, the field is too wide to pick the Blue Jays as a favorite because just so many teams can be involved there because there's a pretty strict cap on how much you can give Sasaki because he's coming over, still under international, posting rules. So you can't just blow away the field like you would for a Darvish back in the day or something like that. So everybody's essentially offering the same finances and terms. So it really does come down to player preference and environment and the teammates and just what his general idea is and perception is of your franchise. And I'm not saying the Blue Jays would have disadvantages in any of those areas, but the fact that so many teams are in just opens it up to so many more possibilities of him preferring life somewhere else. With Burns, I just think that the bidding is likely to get well beyond where the Blue Jays are comfortable with, considering that Max Fried goes for 8 years, $218 million. And Burns is just widely expected and really deserves to earn more than Fried does. So I don't know if that ends up getting into the $250 million range or something like that, but I mean, I would be surprised if the Blue Jays were very comfortable with going over $200 million for Corbin Burns and Fried got $218. So to me, that market is just run away from them. Bregman, I mean, we'll see. Again, just not somebody that I've ever gotten a sense the Blue Jays are particularly interested in. And then the trade stuff is hard to peg, but if you're the Blue Jays and you're already dealing with a farm system that is not perceived very well outside of the organization across the industry, obviously the Blue Jays are higher on it, but there's not a ton of super high upside talent there. Are you going to really want to dip into that further and sacrifice some of your better prospects in trade for Lizardo or whoever else, and then do yourself a bit of a disservice in 26, 27, 28 when you're going to need to be replacing like some really marquee talent on your roster right now, and you're going to really need to have talent coming up from within?
No, exactly. And look, to be clear, you know, when I'm talking about this, and I presume, you know, the same logic holds for you, Arden, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm not saying that they shouldn't go out and acquire Corbin Burns or that that would be a bad idea, because anyone who listened to our last episode knows that, yeah, there's a lot of reasons to go and get Corbin Burns. Corbin Burns is a great pitcher. He's going to make someone a lot better in 2025 and beyond. And that's worth pursuing and worth offering a lot of money to. To me, when I say, and I've said this now for the last week or so, and you know, people don't necessarily like it, nor would I expect them to, but I've said I don't see it as particularly likely that the Blue Jays are going to sign Corbin Burns. And this is in the face of, you know, you see conflicting reports, right? You see, oh, the Blue Jays are front runners. They're considered favorites, all this stuff. I see that stuff too. Now, I still don't believe that they're particularly likely to sign Corbin Burns. And part of that is just following the way that the Blue Jays have bid on other top free agents. And they're bidding on these guys. Like their bid for Juan Soto, well, it was below $700 million. It was still a substantial bid that would have been a massive, you know, biggest contract in baseball history as far as present day dollars. Like it was a big, big bid that obviously required coordination with ownership, but it was a big, big bid that wasn't anywhere close to the Yankees and the Mets, because the Yankees and the Mets were up at like 760. So there was a big difference between where the Blue Jays were and the Yankees and Mets were. And same for Max Fried signing with the New York Yankees for 218 over eight. It's not like the Blue Jays were at 217. You know, the Jays were not close at the end. And, you know, that might prove to be a reasonable decision as things progress with Max Fried. We'll see. But none of that points to me and says, oh, the Blue Jays are this team that, you know, they have this money burning this hole in their pocket and they just can't find a taker for it. What it says to me is the Blue Jays are a team that is armed with money and they can spend, but they are also being deliberate and they are being measured when it comes to their offers. And so they actually are not the high bidder on these players. So it's not like they're making these top bids and being spurned by free agents. These free agents are getting top bids from other places, taking those top bids, not giving the Blue Jays a huge discount to go and sign in Toronto. And so my read when I'm following the Corbin Burns sweepstakes is that, yeah, maybe he does sign for 264 over eight. Maybe the Giants are in at that threshold. Maybe the Red Sox are pretty close too. And I just don't see the Blue Jays going over and above that. So I could be wrong. The Blue Jays would be a lot better with Corbin Burns, and we'll see where that leads. But as of this moment, just following their bidding, I don't see them pushing to the point that they're going to be that high watermark on Corbin Burns. And his market's really strong. So I see him more likely ending up with the Giants or the Red Sox.
Like you, I think the Blue Jays should sign Corbin Burns.
To be clear.
Yeah, right. And if you'd like my perspective on that, just listen to our last podcast episode when I talked for 10 minutes about how much I prefer Burns to Max Fried. Like, I feel like Fried is a Tommy John ticking time bomb and has so he just has fewer directions to go as he declines, just because his fastball isn't as good as Burns' cutter is. Whereas like Burns just has this incredible fastball to work off of, where even if he loses a little bit of velo or effectiveness, like there's just so many different things he can do to still be effective later on into a very long-term contract. Similarly, I think the Blue Jays should have a full court press for Roky Sasaki. And I went into that on like our last episode of the regular season before we even knew if he was going to be posted. And I said, if this guy is being posted, like the Blue Jays need to be all in on him because they've done a ton of groundwork. Ross Atkins has been to Japan to watch him pitch. And like everybody I've talked to who's seen him pitch in Japan says that, yeah, like his stuff is legit. He's the real deal. And he's very, very young. So like there's just, and considering the fact that he's still, like we were saying earlier, you know, subject to international bonus limitations, I mean, just the surplus value on this thing is infinite. It's unbelievable. So absolutely, the Blue Jays should be all in on him. But you have to deal with reality as well. And that is that Roky Sasaki is going to have a ton of options. And Corbin Burnes, the bidding for him, just in this type of market, which has been a very hot market across MLB, like this isn't like the kind of market where the Blue Jays were able to wait around and be opportunistic and find a Marcus Semien deal late in the offseason and get Robbie Ray on like a, what, $8 million deal and, you know, win the bidding for George Springer, because it was really just them and the Mets bidding for him and nobody else was involved in that, really driving up the term and the overall value of the contract. Right now you have a lot of teams that are spending and a lot of teams that are going out and driving up these markets. So with the Blue Jays talking about being disciplined and being like pragmatic and patient and sticking to their valuations, it's hard for me to believe that they're going to come away with any kind of top tier free agent in this market specifically, just because of where the bidding on other guys has gone.
Right. And to your point, like the conditions in the league have changed, and actually they've changed for the better, and it reflects a healthier industry. Major League Baseball as a whole has rebounded to some extent, to a large extent, from the COVID, you know, lack of attendance, the slowdown in revenues that came with that. It has also resolved some of the uncertainty surrounding the broadcast deals in various American markets connected to Bally Sports. So that financial uncertainty has been resolved for the league. And, you know, there's no CBA threat lurking around the corner right here. That might be a couple years down the road. But for now, the league is in a really stable spot. So you have a lot of these teams spending. You have even teams like the Athletics, who historically haven't been big spenders at all, getting involved. So it's a great condition for free agent players. Talking to agents last week, agents are really encouraged by this. They like where the spending is going. And that means that those bargains that the Blue Jays were able to get, when, to their credit, 2020, 2021, this is a team that didn't play home games. They were still out there spending. That is to their credit. And that's a topic for another day. Right now, the Blue Jays are a bit more ordinary when it comes to their willingness to spend. It doesn't stand out as much as it did when they were going out and getting George Springer. So they can still spend. They will still spend on free agents. That's going to happen. But it might not be the biggest names. And I won't be surprised if the Blue Jays end up waiting things out a little to try to find some bargains. Because the way the market for players has been going, it's been a very strong market. But you'll talk to executives from around the league, and there is an expectation that there will be deals that emerge as the offseason progresses and spring training approaches.
Yeah, we haven't seen a market where the Oakland Athletics are signing like a qualified free agent, you know, in Luis Severino for $67 million. Or where Baltimore could spend a lot more than they have been spending to this point. But even them going out and grabbing like a Tyler O'Neill for 3 years and $50 million, like that's clearly a lot higher than anybody else had them, because they won that bidding. On the qualified free agent bit, by the way, like this is a small thing, but if you're involved in the Roky Sasaki bidding right now, you might not want to sign a qualified free agent at this time, because that's going to impact your international bonus pool. So if you're the Blue Jays and you think that you can get Roky Sasaki, like if you think you're still in the running there, if you sign like a Teoscar Hernandez or an Anthony Santander, like there goes $500,000 from your bonus pool, and you need that money if you're going to, because you basically need to make a max bonus pool bid for Roky Sasaki in order to be competitive there. So that could like create a bit of reticence as well for the Blue Jays or other teams that believe that they're in the running for Sasaki to go out and sign a guy who has a qualifying offer.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think that it's a variable that's worth watching. It's interesting, right? Because Sasaki clearly is not motivated first and foremost by money, or else he would wait 2 years. And I think that's what any agent would tell him. He's motivated by the chance to succeed in Major League Baseball and to test himself in this league. But it's not to say he doesn't care about money at all. So that $500,000, you know, even if, according to Joel Wolf, Sasaki's not going to be he's not going to be making his decision based on which team has a slightly higher bonus pool. It still can't hurt the pitch, which is something that as an organization, you have to throw up that Hail Mary. You have to see if there's any interest and sell yourself and say, you know, this is a guy who was treated, you know, in the opinion of some, very harshly by the media in Japan. So you have to sell the Toronto media market as a place where he can rebuild himself and have the chance to fail and succeed again, and to really acclimate himself to the challenges of Major League Baseball with, you know, strong development resources and a winning environment. This is the kind of sales pitch the Jays have to make to Sasaki to even get into that second round where they can pitch themselves further.
So if we just assume the Blue Jays don't get Sasaki and we assume that they're not going to bid what it takes to get a Burns or a Bregman, and like barring some trade out there that none of us are aware of for like a 5 or 6 win player that the Blue Jays are going to acquire, it's really hard to make a case right now that the Blue Jays are building a team to win the American League East in 2025. Just considering like who the Yankees have and who they have acquired this offseason, considering what the Orioles have done, considering what the Red Sox have done in getting Garrett Crochet and having like just amazing high upside prospects like spilling out of their minor league system, considering how good the Rays pitching looks, and they're going to be at a disadvantage this year considering where they're playing their home games and just some of the extensive road trips that they're going to be going on throughout the summer in order to not be like playing in 110 degree weather all that much in Florida and having rainouts every other day. Neither here nor there, like if the Blue Jays offseason continues on the track that it has gone on and Jimenez is the most impactful player that they acquire, they're building a team to project to win like 86 to 88 games. And if that's what your win projection is, you're not building a team to win the American League East. You're building a team to get into the postseason as a wild card and hopefully go on a run.
Yes. I wish I could sit here and disagree with you and say that, you know, you're so wrong. This team is, you know, this team is projected. They're going to be so good, because that would make 2025 a lot more interesting, right? For anyone following this team. As it stands, I think that they're in a good case where they can make some good moves toward the as the offseason continues here. They are going to project as a wild card contender, and they of course will have a chance to exceed expectations or fall short of them. You know, we've seen both. So with more falling short of expectations than exceeding them for a team that hasn't won a playoff game since 2016, right? That's a long time. Rick Porcello was the Cy Young winner that year. So, you know, a lot has changed in the game since the Blue Jays won a single playoff game. And 2025 is not necessarily going to be that, you know, layup, walk into the postseason, just given the competition in their division. This is a really good division around the Blue Jays. They are it is going to be uphill. They need to nail their remaining moves. They need to get power. They need to get more pitching. Just the overall depth of this pitching staff is not there. Right now, the cleanup hitter might be, what, Will Wagner, Alejandro Kirk? Like, they need a cleanup hitter. They need power. This is a team that has clear needs. They're not good enough right now. They will make more moves, but, you know, they need to make those some really good moves, because right now, as things are looking, this is a team with some real shortcomings.
Yeah, and if they had like a Roman Anthony or like a Marcelo Meyer just ready to step in, or like a Carson Williams or a Jason Dominguez just ready to step in and like make a big impact on this roster, it would be different, because you'd say, well, it's coming from within. Like, look at all the potential here from some young players who are going to make their debuts. That doesn't exist for the Blue Jays. They don't have that. But all those names that I just listed, those are all guys who are within their division who are going to be making their debuts likely this year for the Red Sox and for the Rays. And, you know, Dominguez has already debuted for the Yankees. And those are like 21, 22-year-old players, 23-year-old players who are going to be making big impacts on the other teams in the division. So it's not only that, you know, a Crochet comes in and a Fried comes in and a Devin Williams comes in and, you know, a Tyler O'Neill and the Orioles being as good as they are and the Rays having like McClanahan back and like so many starters that they're like, yeah, just take Jeffrey Springs. Like, we don't even need him. It's not only that, it's the like upward impact that they're going to be having on their rosters as well. Like, they are going to be getting better internally beyond just the external moves that they have made this offseason, which in many cases are more impactful than the ones the Blue Jays have made to this point.
Yeah, absolutely. You think about Baltimore, and think about the production that Baltimore got from Jackson Holliday, Coby Mayo, and I don't know, Bisalo, the catcher, in 2024. Pretty limited, really. Like, it might have been negative war, actually, just given how those guys, you know, kind of struggled in their debuts. But it is entirely possible that Holliday and Mayo could be, you know, really big contributors for this team in 2025. So the Jays, you know, could you dream on Aroldis Martinez and Alan Rodon? You can, but the industry doesn't regard those guys with the same kind of overall potential as a Roman Anthony or a Jackson Holliday. It's just not the same ability based on what we've seen. So it's more of a stretch for the Blue Jays, and they have some real shortcomings that right now, based on our understanding of their payroll picture, they are going to have limited resources to be able to address that. Now, is that $15 million? Is it $12 million? Maybe it's more like $24-25 million that they have to address their remaining needs. The Blue Jays keep that murky deliberately. They don't want us to be able to pinpoint that figure, but we do our best to try to guess at it. And, you know, my guess is they might have $24-25 million, something like that, to be able to go and address their remaining needs. But that's still pretty tricky.
Yeah, well, when you look at their current CBT estimate, and this is based off of some arbitration estimates, and we'll see where things go, but the Blue Jays right now, their estimate is around $228 million, and that first CBT threshold is $241 million, so $13 million beneath. And look, the Blue Jays can start this season above the first threshold and still feel good about their ability to duck back under it if need be. We saw them do that last year when they started. I want to say it was kind of around 250, maybe a little bit below. And then by like trading an IKF and a Turner and, you know, a Kikuchi at the deadline and a Jansen, they were able to just duck under and reset their penalty. They could do that again. They could also kind of fall somewhere in the middle of that first threshold and second threshold and be like, hey, we're actually having some really good outcomes this season. We're going to add at the deadline, leave themselves a bit of buffer before the second threshold with which to add at the deadline, whether it's like relievers or, you know, an impact bat or a starter or what have you, and still have enough room to stay under that second threshold and just duck under next year when you have like a Vlad, Bo, Bassett, Green, Swanson all coming off the books, like $80 million probably right there. So This isn't super restrictive, but I certainly don't see the Blue Jays going past the second threshold. And I think that they would want to have some buffer between where they end up and the second threshold, even if they're above the first one. So I think you're spot on. Like, I think the Blue Jays are looking at like $22-23 million to spend over the rest of this season without, you know, a unique opportunity outlay for I guess a Corbin Burns would be like the one guy right now who would qualify for that, you know, like the type of like money they can tap into when it's Juan Soto or Shohei Ohtani, or when they pursued Seager, when they pursued Freeman. So short of that, yeah, you're looking at like $23 million, let's say. Okay, let's sign Teoscar Hernandez. Well, there goes 20. Now you got $3 million left, and you still need a high leverage reliever, a lefty in your bullpen, another bat ideally, and a starter. And there's just no feasible way to make all those pieces fit.
Yeah, no, exactly. And this is where that's the most logical picture of their finances that I've heard, where it's like, hey, you could go a little above if they're good at the trade deadline. And if they're bad at the trade deadline, you could actually duck back below. So if you're around 250, that gives you $10 million on either side to either move up or down. That seems like a pretty reasonable guess at how things might look. And so, yeah, in that scenario, hey, maybe you add Teoscar, you know, let's say you might even be $23 million if you're, you know, 70 over three, something like that. So, you know, that starts to eat up pretty much most of what you have left. Or let's say you go on the pitching side where the price of pitching has been really high. So, you know, for Shamania, to get Shamania to say okay to a deal, you know, is that 90 over four? I'm not sure. But it's probably not a small number just when you look at Ovaldi, when you look at, you know, obviously Severino, Kikuchi, you're probably looking at something at least comparable to those deals if you want to sign Mania. So that's over 20. And then what's the bat? How are you solving things offensively? Is that like a minor league deal for Tommy Pham and then you're really cheaping out in the bullpen? And I mean, I know you wrote about this at sportsnet.ca this week and you identified some really, potential bargain relievers. And I really like some of those suggestions that you had. But at the same time, you know, you might not even be able to afford a lot of those guys if you start going down this path. So it's going to be tricky.
Yeah, if Teoscar is $23 million, like you're trying to fill out your bullpen with minor league signings. And like it's important to remember, like for CBT purposes, the AAV of the contract is what's factored in. So it doesn't matter if you like sign Teoscar for 70 over three and $60 million are in the final 2 years. That doesn't matter. It's the AAV is what counts towards the tax. So there's no way you can even work around it there. Like you can use deferrals in order to lower the CBT hit. And I think that with the Blue Jays' pursuit of Juan Soto, deferrals would have been a pretty big part of that. But good for Juan Soto and getting a contract that has no deferrals. So that is just all present day money, $51 million a year, possibly going up if the Mets buy him out of his opt out, guaranteed like $300 million after his 35th birthday. Just a ridiculous deal, like just a slam dunk, like a deal that like may have serious ramifications on the next CBA. just a deal I never thought that I would see. Which is kind of the other side of this, right? Where we're saying like, look, if the Blue Jays don't go after one of these really impactful ads, they're just building a team to make it into the postseason. Considering the landscape and considering where they're at, I'm not saying that's the worst decision to make. Like, I think that if this was purely a case study and you just like took out the business ops considerations and ticket sales and a renovation at Rogers Center and just like the general sort of forward momentum of the franchise over the last several years and what they've been building towards and what ownership's vision of this franchise is fitting within like its expanding suites of sports properties with MLSE and the way that Rogers is sort of positioning itself as an owner of multiple sports franchises. Like if you stripped all that away and just looked at it as an objective case study, I think that there's a very sound strategic case to be made that the Blue Jays should actually blow this up and the Blue Jays should actually start trading away some of their high impact players and looking to reset and put themselves in a better position to win sustainably over time. But that's not realistic with where they're at right now, with how they're positioned and what their overall strategy is. So barring that and not wanting to commit like $300 million to Juan Soto after his 35th birthday, right, and sign a completely fiscally irresponsible deal, as happy as I am for him and as like cool as it is to see it happen in baseball, Steve Cohen like is not making money on that deal. And Steve Cohen is not running the Mets as a business right now.
No.
He's running them as a toy because he's running them out of ego, and good for him. It's really cool to see that happen. The Blue Jays aren't doing that. The Blue Jays are running a business and they're trying to make fiscally responsible deals. And I don't think that, like you said, $265 million over 8 years for Corbin Burnes would be a fiscally responsible deal for a starting pitcher in his 30s. So not wanting to make bad deals for the franchise long term, which is what it seems like it would take to get one of those super high-impact players, and not wanting to blow it up and take a step back, well, then really like the most sensible choice is to sign like short-term deals on, players that improve your win potential up to 85, 86, 87, 88 wins and try to sneak into the third wild card spot and be lucky and be that like Arizona Diamondbacks team or that, the Phillies from several years ago who made it as a third wild card and went to the World Series. Like, that is, to me, what makes the most sense, considering kind of how unrealistic, unfeasible, unwise some of the other options are.
Yeah, it's...
Did that make any sense, what I just
said? No, it does. And I think that probably explains how the Blue Jays have ended up here. And like, they're not... This isn't like a normal business. You know, if this was like Honda Canada or something, like they would run this in a different way. the fact is they have fans, and that changes it. And that's an incredible part of sports, obviously. And we don't want it to be any different. But I think that, you know, it even connects to the Vlad Jr. discussion, right? Where it's like, mm-hmm. you have a first baseman who doesn't run the bases great. And like, is that really in Mark Shapiro's DNA to like put his hand up and say, yep, let's go to $400 million? I don't think it is. Now, I still think there's an incredibly strong case to consider doing that. And, you know, we can get into that whole discussion later. But the point being, there are a lot of different push-pull factors here. And, you know, end of the day, it's the job of a front office to overcome whatever obstacles are in their way. And the best front offices consistently find ways to overcome those obstacles. They exist. They are real. Whether it's the Canadian dollar, whether it's the fact that, you know, your development hasn't gone the way you wanted to, or, you know, there's more competition in a certain market than you anticipated. A player regresses, a player underperforms, you have injuries. All these things are legit obstacles, but the best front offices in baseball end up talking about the stories and the players who succeeded in spite of that, and the coaches who got the most of their players in spite of that, and the front office members who found that minor league deal and were able to eke out an 87 win season even when things went wrong for their superstars. And so the Jays haven't done enough of that. We'll see what happens this year, but they have not done enough of that. They have not overcome those obstacles well enough, and that's why they are in the position that they're in, where it's an uphill battle. And this should be the crowning moment of a competitive window in Bo and Vlad and their final season, as these guys are entering their absolute prime as players. Instead, that's not at all the way things are looking. They are hoping, and this is the indictment of where they are as a franchise right now. This should be a crowning moment. Instead, they're hoping to eke it in as a wild card team. And I'm not trying to, you know, take that hope away and say that, you know, there isn't some chance that this team could be good next year, because I don't want to be that despairing here in December and say that there's no chance that this team is good next year. But man, it is not a good sign for at this point in the organization. You have these guys in their prime, and there's just not enough to surround it with. And we can go back to drafting and development. We can look at coaching. We can look at how it all fits together and communication. But one way or another, the supporting cast around Vlad and Bo is not strong enough. And that puts pressure on the next moves that this front office makes, because they need to hit on the next couple of players they add.
That's everything. The drafting and development, like, that is why it hasn't worked. When you look at the last few years of Blue Jays baseball and what this front office has tried to do, they've tried to take big swings. Like, they have tried to make moves to win the division. Like, you look at the offseason that they signed George Springer. Like, that was the biggest deal handed out that offseason. 6 years, $150 million. No one got it. They signed the biggest free agent of that winter, and then they made great deals with Marcus Semien and Robbie Ray.
Home run deals. Like,
right?
Epic offseason.
They tried to hit another home run with Kirby Yates. Didn't quite work out, but they were in a position to be able to, like, stomach the $6 million or whatever it was for Yates, because you were still in a position where, like, Vlad and Bo were maybe league minimum. I don't even think they had begun ARB. Maybe Vlad had begun ARB, right, because he was Super 2. But, like, they, you know, those guys were just barely earning anything. Teoscar Hernandez at that point would have been, like, first-year ARB. You know, like, they had so much surplus value. They were able to do things like that. Lo and behold, they built, like, the best team of this era that we've seen, that 2021 team. You know, they were undercut by their situation in terms of where they were playing their home ball games. And they didn't address their bullpen there quite early enough, or as early as they should have. But then suddenly, like, an Adam Simber and a Trevor Richards showed up and things stabilized a bit, and they missed the postseason by a game. And who knows what would have happened if they made the postseason. But to me, that 2021 team was the best one that we've seen. They tried to win a division that year, and they nearly snuck into the playoffs. And that was the year before, by the way, the playoffs expanded. And if they had been expanded by a spot that year, the Blue Jays would have been in. And then going forward from there, they took big swings at Ohtani, big swings at Soto, came up short in those pursuits. And you look at last offseason, the sensible thing when you missed out on Ohtani was to go with, like Chris Bassett said, there was no plan B, right? Like the fallback plan was, all right, let's see if we can get a Kiermaier and a Turner and an IKF and make things work with, you know, kind of conglomerating a bunch of, you know, veterans who we think have upside on short-term deals. And this offseason is looking similar, where if they had gotten Soto, okay, it's here we go, all in. Like, let's keep adding, let's win the AL East. But they missed out on Soto, and like Burns is going to be too expensive for them. And the fallback option from that is, all right, let's take Andrés Giménez and like really dive in on our run prevention and on our defense and making our pitchers better and our base running better. And let's try to win that way and add like, you know, a Kepler and a Sims and a whoever, right? Like put together three or four guys on the free agent market who total up to $23 million who are all not valued super high, but have upside, and build a team that's going to project to win 86 games. And maybe with like the 10 win error bars there, maybe you end up getting 91 wins. Maybe you end up getting 81 wins. Depending on luck and depending on how things go and injuries and performance and regression, this, that, and the other. Like, I think that is sensible considering the situation. Having missed out on Soto and the alternatives that are out there and what it's going to cost to get those alternatives, what it'll mean for long-term stability of the team winning in the future of the franchise. But what's missing in all of this is that upward pressure, drafting, development, yes. Players coming up, because then you can withstand Vlad and Bo getting more expensive. You can withstand trading a Teoscar Hernandez and trading a Lourdes Gurriel Jr. in order to address your defense and your base running and your bullpen. Like, you can withstand these things. George Springer declining and the back end of your bullpen last year blowing up. If you can backfill that with really good players coming from within your system, you can withstand that and you can still win. The Blue Jays just haven't had that the last few years because they haven't drafted and developed well enough. And that's kind of why they've ended up where they are.
That's right. If they had that support, it would be a different story. But TJ Zoik, Logan Warmoth, Nate Pearson, Jordan Groshans, Manoa, okay, great. Maybe he helps in the second half. He's been a good pick. Austin Martin, Gunnar Hoglund, Brandon Barriera, Arjun Namala, a lot of promise there. You know, that's intriguing. And Treya Savage, who they picked this year. Those are their first round picks. So, you know, you're not talking about enough impact there. And look, if the Blue Jays go out this offseason and their offseason is Andrés Giménez and Sean Manaea and Lucas Sims, I think fans are going to be so pissed. Oh, man. And I understand it because, you know, there still is room for a power bat. I know there are a million directions we go here. I know we got to step away. But yeah, no shortage of intrigue for the Blue Jays here.
All right, let's step away and try to make some sense of this when we continue on At the Letters.
Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
It continues on At the Letters. Arden Swelling, Ben Nicholson Smith. Our producers are Nick Andrade and Christian Ryan. And Ben, you know, very stream of consciousness first half of this podcast, just kind of working through, you know, thoughts that have been bouncing around our brains and percolating. But it's always kind of like important to step back and think about, you know, those who are just like casual fans who are just looking at this team and like kind of what is being, you know, speculated and reported throughout the baseball industry throughout the offseason. And like, it can be a little bit contradictory. Like when we come here and we say, yeah, like the Blue Jays are going to be, you know, very measured and they're going to stick to their valuations. And, you know, you're reporting in the first half of this podcast, yeah, they weren't up there on Soto, and yeah, they weren't up there on Max Fried. And yet, if you just like pull, you know, turn on MLB Network, or you just pull up like usatoday.com or whatever it is, and it's Blue Jays being uber aggressive, Blue Jays are gonna do something crazy, like Blue Jays are determined to make a splash, you know, Blue Jays are gonna, you know, have the highest bid on so and so. How do you kind of like rectify these things? Like, how is it possible that we understand the way the Blue Jays, that we are sort of describing the Blue Jays posture one way, and yet if you just read the headlines, they're actually being described rather differently?
Yeah, exactly. And this is a question that I got from executives with other teams, where they'd say, hey, what's going on with the Jays? You know, are they really going to do something crazy? Are they on tilt? You know, are they on the brink of something wild? And this is a question that, you know, exists within the industry. So I think there are two possibilities. One is I'm totally wrong. So, you know, that's possible. It's happened before. So, you know, let's acknowledge that. I see another possibility where the Jays are bidding for these free agents. And if we're talking about, you know, $600 million plus for Juan Soto, that's a serious bid. It's a real bid. And, you know, they would have real interest at some level for someone like Fried or someone like Corbin Burns or someone like Alex Bregman. And they're not like, this isn't like the, you know, the A's or the Guardians checking on Corbin Burns. Like the Jays at a certain threshold would be in. So it's real interest, but maybe it's not market setting interest. Maybe it's not market driving interest to the point that, you know, we're talking about new records being broken, which is the kind of contract that obviously it would take to sign Fried or Soto or Burns. So hypothetically, and this is speculative, but what if you're an agent representing one of those players? You know the Blue Jays are in, but you also know they're not driving the price forward for these guys. So how do you get the most out of the Blue Jays' interest in that case? One possibility would be you floated out there that the Blue Jays are actually super serious. So you kind of know in the back of your mind they're probably not going to be the one who's the number one bidder on these players. But you floated out there through media sources, and you maybe even tell other individuals with teams that, hey, the Blue Jays are also pretty serious here. So then word gets out, and there's this impression created that the Blue Jays are on tilt, that the Blue Jays have money burning a hole in their pocket, that the Blue Jays want to spend money, they just can't find anyone who will take it. And gradually, a perception gets created that the Blue Jays are hyper, hyper motivated, and that they just are just absolutely desperate to find someone who's willing to take their money. Now, in reality, in this scenario, which again is somewhat speculative, in reality, maybe the Blue Jays are interested and seriously interested, but they're not actually driving the market. They're more just kind of there and, you know, on their terms, being disciplined. But, you know, they have real interest. So if you add it up and look at it through that lens, that's the scenario that I kind of see here, where, yeah, they have interest in Corbin Burns, but maybe someone's putting it out there that they're a front runner when they're actually not quite a front runner. And maybe that agenda benefits someone who's not the Blue Jays.
And the Blue Jays have not been what they've said publicly on the record this offseason. At no point have they ever ratcheted up expectations to the level of like, yes, we are definitely going to get one of the top three free agents, or like there's never been a report of like, oh, yeah, Blue Jays official, you know, who were like not identifying in order to let them speak candidly said, yeah, we're going to just like spend insane gobs of money this offseason.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the Blue Jays like public posture through this all has been, hey, like, look, we're looking to be opportunistic, but we also understand the value of, you know, patience. And, you know, we're obviously going to engage with everybody on the market, and we're going to get a well-rounded idea, a fulsome idea of the market and where it stands. And, you know, we're going to look for our opportunities, but we're also going to have alternatives in mind. We're going to do what's best for the team. Like, they just communicate exactly who they are and who they've been for the last several years. Disciplined, pragmatic, data-driven, you know, like sticking to their valuations. Like, you know, this has been their behavior for the last several years. And I don't think there's any reason to believe that all of a sudden this offseason is going to be different going forward, where, like you said, they're going to be, quote, on tilt, or they're going to spend, quote, stupid money. Like, that contradicts everything we've seen from this Blue Jays front office over several years. We have, you know, this is a crew that you would want to run your investment portfolio. Like, they are, you know, they're calculated, right? Like, they carefully consider risk profiles of every move. They're looking to gain value in every transaction. You know, they'll take a big shot for really unique opportunities like Ohtani, Soto, Seager, Freeman, etc. But if bidding ever gets into uncomfortable territory for a Fried, a Burns, a Bregman, or what have you, they have well-defined walk-away points that they have decided on well before the negotiation ever started, and they will walk away at that point. Like, this is, you know, these guys are the thinking fast and slow of MLB front offices. Yeah. And a lot of front offices are that way. But this is how they've always done business. And there's just no reason to believe that they're going to do things any differently this offseason, including, you know, anyone's job security and you know, anyone possibly no longer being a GM or a president or an assistant GM or whatever. If things don't go well this year, that doesn't mean that the Blue Jays are going to do something irrational or undisciplined, because even if you aren't a GM of the Toronto Blue Jays next year, you still want another job in baseball. Like, you still want to keep working, and you don't want, like, your final moves with a team to be that, like, oh, you just went off the handle and did a bunch of crazy stuff and put the franchise in a terrible position going forward. That's not really somebody that you want to hire in the future. So they're still going to be, like, professional and disciplined and pragmatic, and I think that's what they're doing.
Yeah, that's their DNA. That's what they've done consistently. And sometimes you can find, hey, signing Kevin Gausman for 110 over five, that's both a big contract and a really good way to spend money. So yeah, they've made deals like that, and they'll continue to make deals. Like, there's, you know, they will spend on free agents. I mean, clearly their CBT team, it's really more a question of how those deals work and are they supplementing it internally with, you know, drafting and development well enough, all those sorts of questions. But no, I think that that's accurate. They're not, Marc Shapiro is not a just for the hell of it kind of president of baseball operations. He's not a, hey, let's just, you know, try something new. Let's just go wild. It's just not. And so more often than not, that's probably a good thing. But sometimes I'm sure fans would like it if you know, there's like a little bit more just for the hell of it. And you think back to Alex Anthopoulos in 2014 before that 15 season when he went out and he got Russ Martin. He goes out and gets Josh Donaldson. Absolutely incredible moves. You know, really, that was the start of AA as the World Series winning GM, the guy who's always in the playoffs. And that was the start of something for him. But, you know, you look at Ross Atkins now. That's not the way he's operating. And partly I think that's Ross Atkins. And partly, this is a team that's, Mark Shapiro was the president of baseball operations. And I just don't see this team being reckless and saying, oh, whatever, it's just money. You know, they're going to be, I think, you know, pretty consistent in the way that they've done things. And look, I also understand any fan looking at this and saying, well, where does that consistency lead? It's not a good roster right now. It's not a good farm system. So I'm not saying this to erase any doubts, but more just to describe the situation that's unfolding in front of us here.
Yeah, I think we've been pretty realistic about where the Blue Jays stand right now and the situation that they're in. But yeah, you're right. It's just not a situation where, you know, the Blue Jays will offer Anthony Santander like 60 over three, and then Team X will come in at 80 over four, and the Blue Jays will just say, oh, whatever, just give him the extra year. 100 over yeah. five, you know, just to, because we need him, because like we need to get this guy. Like, they just won't do that. It's not going to happen. Nope. There's no just throwing an extra year. There's no just throwing an extra $20 million. Like, it's just not how they're going to operate.
And there's a downside to that too, because, you know, Steve Cohen, hey, he's not worried about dollars per war. I'll tell you that right now.
Nope.
But Steve Cohen, guess what?
Nope.
He has Juan Soto on his team. He has Clay Holmes on his team. Frankie Montas, like, he's going to get more players. So, you know, at a certain point, I think that you can get too beholden to dollars per war and, hey, this projection says this. And if you look at the Blue Jays and how they operate, I think a lot of the time, you know, they're not actually that hard to figure out. You can look at projected war, projected cost, find the intersection of those two things. Where can you get a lot of projected war for a low projected cost? That's probably where the Blue Jays are going to be shopping. And that is a smart place to shop as a starting point. But I think they can kind of get stuck there a little bit. And I think that sometimes if you're too beholden to dollars per war, you might end up with a team that has no backup catcher or no bullpen, because those are expensive places to shop relative to war. You might end up with not a lot of power bats and a huge amount of defense, because defense is efficient when you're spending on defense. It's quote unquote undervalued. So the Jays now have this great defensive team without power, without a bullpen, without a backup catcher. So you actually have flaws on this team. And those are places where if you kind of throw dollars per war to the wind, then you can actually end up getting players who help the team and who actually just make the team better. But look, I understand too, opportunity costs, you can't necessarily address everything. And that's going to be what the Blue Jays have. When they start the 2025 season, they're going to have an imperfect team.
So say the Blue Jays had like a really incredible player on their roster who was like a 5 to 6 win player, and he's like just entering his prime. He's like 25 this season. You know, he's going to be 26, and he's coming off of this great year where he's, you know, one of the best hitters in baseball over like the final 4 months of the season.
Left field, deep, and it is gone. That'll boost the batting average, the home runs, the RBIs, and a lot of other things along with it, including the lead.
But he's going to be a free agent. Like, he's entering his final year of contractual control. And you've just seen, you know, a 26-year-old generational talent get paid, you know, upwards of $700 million on the free agent market. And you've got one of these guys who may or may not be a generational talent, depends on who you ask. But, you know, a guy who, like, clearly is a 5 or 6 win player, clearly very valuable. How would you apply it to him? Because if you are pragmatic and sensible and you stick to like what is a like quote unquote reasonable, rational valuation of that player, considering where the market has gone this winter, it's hard to imagine that you're going to retain that player when he has a ton of leverage and is a year away from entering free agency and going out and getting an offer like Juan Soto just did.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. That's the huge dilemma for the Blue Jays right now. And, you know, there's reason to believe that January will be a really big month for that, because that is, you know, when Vlad Jr. is going to have to exchange figures with the Blue Jays in anticipation of an arbitration salary for 2025. That is the time to really, you know, before spring training gets started, and there's, you know, the focus should be on the field the closer you get to opening day. So January really could be a time for that. From what I understand, talking to people who are, you know, definitely, you know, better versed on this stuff than I am, closer to the situation than I am, it sounds like Vlad Jr. is still very open to having extension talks with the Blue Jays. And clearly this is something the Blue Jays would ideally like to do as well. So, okay, great. That's, you know, that's a starting point that gets you to the table. What happens next? Can you actually bridge that gap and agree on value? And to your point, this is where it gets challenging. And I think, to me, I've never bought a piece of really fine art in my life, but I almost compare it to that in my mind, where it's like, if you want to get that piece of fine art that there's only one of, price kind of goes out the window. Like, you're not going to necessarily compare it to something that you're buying on Etsy if you're also buying something at a Sotheby's auction. Like, Steve Cohen is just in there to win it. He's in there to win the auction. It doesn't almost matter. And end of the day, you have that one-of-a-kind player or you don't. And I could see the Blue Jays being very true to their valuation here. And this is going to test them as a front office, because the scenario that Vlad Jr. walks out that door and is someone else's prized free agent in 12 months' time, that leaves the Blue Jays with zero offense and no core and an uncertain path forward. So it doesn't mean that you just hand Vlad Jr. a blank check, but you, in my opinion, I've said this before, but I think you've got to be prepared to think about a $400 million deal for him as a 5-win player who's very much in his prime.
Steve Cohen, by the way, is someone who has an art collection valued at over $1 billion.
Just there we go.
Neither here nor there. So here's the thing with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Like, if the extension is going to take over $400 million, like if it's going to be $425 million, $450 million. At that point, if I'm the Blue Jays, I'm letting him go to market, because like I'm telling him to like go prove it, like go get that deal. And if you can get that deal in the open market, like, okay, we've got the ability to match it. We've got the ability to beat it. Maybe we won't do either of those things, but like, I just don't see like where, like why the Blue Jays would give him that like figure on an extension now. When so much can change over, like, for as much as, you know, Vlad can go out and have an amazing season and make himself more money, that could not happen. You know, like, he could not have the season that we're envisioning for him. Like, you know, need we revisit the conversation around Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at the end of the 23 season? And the conversation around Bo Bichette at that point, like, literally 1 year ago when it was, wow, like give Bo Bichette a $350 million extension right now. And wow, like trade Vladimir Guerrero Jr. straight up for Juan Soto or whatever the, you know, crazy proposals that were being thrown around at that point. So a lot can change in 11 to 12 months. And the other point that I would make, and why I would not advise the Blue Jays to extend him if it's over $400 million, is that every free agent market is distinct. Like we make this mistake every winter where if it's a cold market, we all go, oh my God, what's wrong with baseball? The, you know, the financial structure is broken. Why aren't these guys getting paid? Like, you know, why is, you know, Blake Snell and Matt Chapman and Cody Bellinger still, you know, free agents having to settle for these pillow contracts? We just project that forward as if it's going to be that way again next year. Just like this year, it's a super hot market, and Juan Soto had, you know, this crazy bidding war between some of the richest owners in baseball. When you're talking about Steve Cohen and Edward Rogers and Hal Steinbrenner and John Henry, and one of them, Steve Cohen, who was clearly just like not tied to making a financially responsible, a fiscally responsible deal, and was clearly just letting emotion and ego drive that process for him. Who's to say that that's there for Vlad next year? Like, who's to say that it's a hot market? It could be. It could be again, or it could be a market distinct of this one. And maybe Vlad doesn't have the same bidders that Soto had for whatever reason, because, you know, they're just not spending money at the time, or they don't think Vlad's worth the investment, et cetera. And maybe he goes out to market, and even coming off of a good year, maybe 450 isn't there for him. And maybe as the Blue Jays are like, all right, we'll sign you for high 300s or 400 as a free agent. Like, they still have that ability, and Vlad clearly still wants to be in Toronto. So to me, like, if the extension really is in excess of 400, if I'm the Jays, I'm telling them, all right, play out your final year and we'll see what happens next winter.
Yeah, that's a reasonable take. And I think it's a good point on the markets and how the markets can shift year to year in ways that are pretty unpredictable, but pretty significant. I think too, Soto, like, that contract is not being surpassed anytime soon. That is going to be the leader for a long time. And incredible deal by Scott Boras, incredible deal for Juan Soto, perfect storm. No one's going to come close to that. In the 24 hours after that deal happened, I had a lot of conversations with people at the winter meetings, and there was, you know, maybe these are not the most thought out conversations. It's a little bit reactionary. It's maybe a little bit emotional in some cases, but people were wondering about Vlad Jr. as a $500 million free agent. And I do think that his absolute, absolute upside, like if Vladdy goes out and has a, let's say it's another 165 WRC plus type season, I do think that, you know, he could get 13 times 40, something like that. And that would be over $500 million. I think that that's his, you know, high end contract potential. But man, you know, he's also a first baseman. I understand that. You know, you can look at cautionary tales like Prince Fielder and say not everyone who's really good through their first 6 years stays good for the next 10 or 15 years. And you got to be diligent anytime that you're thinking about contracts. But I don't know. I still land on the side of yes, it's a good idea, because you got to have someone anchoring your team, and you have to believe that you're training staff is going to be able to work with this player to stay healthy and stay on the field and stay productive as he passes the age of 30. And so I don't know, there's no such thing as a sure thing bet in sports, but I don't know. I think if you're a big market team and you have a homegrown player who's one of the best hitters in the sport and he's only 25 years old, I think there are a lot worse places you could spend your money.
So you look at the largest contract ever awarded to a first baseman in the history of baseball. It's Bryce Harper, $330 million over 13 years. So that's like a 25 and change AAV.
And he was signed as an outfielder.
Right. But I think it was pretty clear where things were going with him.
Sure.
But I suppose you can make the same case with Soto then, right? Because Soto was signed as an outfielder. But how long until he's a first baseman?
Right.
DH, right?
DH, but, yeah.
I mean, if you're Vlad, you're not getting the first couple years of him playing the outfield, right? Yeah. And as much as, you know, the Blue Jays are going to play around with him playing third base, I mean, the last time he played third base on a regular basis, he was statistically the worst third baseman in the league defensively. So that's, you know, it's somewhat damning.
Yeah.
Is Vlad really going to go out and like beat Harper, even though this is what, 4 or 5 years later, and beat him by $170 million? By like what, $15 or $16 million per season? It's just kind of, I find it hard to believe.
Yeah, which is fair, but I think Harper's definitely underpaid on that contract. And I think that, you know, even if we say, okay, so Soto's AAV is $51 million, right? And yeah. Harper's is what, 25, you said?
It's 330 over 13. So whatever, what would that work out to? 25 something, right? 25 and change?
Yeah, 25 and change. So that is actually a huge range of potential AAVs. I mean, clearly Vladdy's over 25. He's going to make 28 in ARB, right? So
right.
That tells you right there, you know, if he was worth less than 28, the Blue Jays would non-tender him. They're ruthless, right? They non-tender Jordan Romano. They if they felt Vladdy was true value, was 24, they'd non-tender the guy. I'm telling you right now. So they feel that his value is obviously over $28 million. That's a great deal. Vladdy has trade value, right? So he's worth more than $28 million. I think that his value is probably substantially more than $28 million. I think if the Jays tried to trade Vladdy right now, and he's, you know, set to make 28, everyone knows that, I think they could actually get something quite good back for him. So I think his true AAV or his true value is probably more like in the 40 plus range. And I think that free agency that would be reflected. So he's also such a young player that, you know, you're probably talking about a 10-12 year deal. 10 or 12 times 40, I mean, that gets you over the 400 threshold. So that's where my thinking goes. Now, of course, I'm assuming he's having another good year, but I'm also told he's in great shape and highly motivated and all this stuff that you'd expect to hear from a player entering his walk here.
But I don't agree with using the Soto deal to like tether this discussion, because the Soto deal is just completely irrational.
Sure.
Like, just, it's completely fiscally irresponsible. Like, and again, I'm happy he got it. Like, I'm happy to see it. It's so interesting. It's great for the game, etc. But we're not going to see another deal even approaching that for like over a decade. You know, like I don't know that like the player who approaches that is even like within affiliate baseball right now.
Well, I actually had this debate with a few people as far as like who could eclipse it. And like if Gunnar Henderson keeps rattling off 9 WAR seasons, maybe Gunnar Henderson does. But I actually agree with you that it's entirely possible this individual is now like, you know, preparing for, you know, high school sophomore season.
So. You know, yeah, he's at the IMG Academy in the lab or something. But like, so to me, while the Harper deal is an underpay, it's still more closely tethered to reality than the Soto one. So if the Harper deal is like 25 and change per for a first baseman over 13 years, maybe Vlad is like 33 and a third, like 33.3. per year, and maybe it's 400 over 12 is what's actually reasonable, quote unquote, as much as, you know, $400 million can be reasonable, as what is actually reasonable for Vlad. If I'm the Blue Jays, like 400 for 12 for Vlad, I think that's honestly like a good offer right now, a fair offer, and something that I would sign him to. If it's beyond 400 for me, I'm like, all right, go to market and prove that you can do substantially better than that. Like, prove that it's out there. Go play this year, stay healthy, be productive, go get that offer in a market that could be completely different from this one, in which you might not have a Steve Cohen just throwing around blank checks. Go get something better than 400 over 12, because there's no guarantee that's going to be out there.
I follow your train of thought there. Here's where I would push it higher. End of the day, I would push it higher, because I would say that, let's say it costs 415. You know, let's say it costs 410, whatever. I'm just throwing these numbers out here. But if it costs 410 to get Vladdy locked in, and yeah, you know, so you're amortizing another $10 million over the course of 12 years, like, it's fine. I think that paying that extra money, once you're already up at that threshold, for the certainty that you are not going to enter the 2026 season with Will Wagner as your best hitter, that's worth something, you know, for the certainty that Ernie Clement and Andrés Giménez are not your 2-3 hitters in 12 months' time. To me, that's worth a little premium.
All right, 410 over 12, but I'm not giving you the suite at home games. You got to kick that back.
Fair enough.
Kick that back. No free Wi-Fi on the flight. All right. You're going to have to pay your $15 like everybody else.
That's right. Sorry, Vladdy. It's tough times.
We've come this far and we haven't even talked about the Andrés Giménez deal. Would you like to offer some quick thoughts on what the Blue Jays, like something the Blue Jays have actually done this offseason in trading Spencer Horwitz for Andrés Giménez and reliever Nick Sandlin?
So Giménez, and I know you know this, but for anyone listening, like absolutely phenomenal defender, like unbelievable range, really good arm. He just gets to balls that other guys don't get to.
And a big bouncer. And oh, Giménez, the throw. Oh, what a pick. And he's out. An incredible play on both ends. Giménez to Josh Naylor. My goodness. Oh, that's why he sports that platinum label on his glove. Spectacular play by Andrés.
So he is a difference maker defensively. I talked to executives who have nothing to do with the Blue Jays, nothing to do with the Guardians, who were like, yeah, this guy could be worth 20 plus million on defense alone. Like, he is an incredible defensive difference maker. So that's really good. It is the baseline for his production. He's also a good base stealer, not much of a hitter. I wouldn't expect him to be an offensive difference maker for this team. He's kind of put the bat on the ball. He beats out a lot of bunt hits. He beats out a lot of infield hits. Not going to hit a ton of homers, maybe 10, 11, 12 homers in the course of a season. And, you know, he's not drawn a ton of walks. So he's limited in his offensive potential, but he's still a really, really good player. And I think the contract is fair. You're getting his prime seasons. It's not like you're buying his decline phase. And Horwitz, you know, he's a good player who has value, but I think that you're selling high, honestly. And if 12 months ago, if someone had said you have a chance to have Andrés Giménez or Spencer Horwitz, absolutely every team in baseball has taken Andrés Giménez. So it's a bet on a bounce back that may or may not happen. But I think at least the Jays are getting a really, really good defensive player. And just overall, it's a good player. So in a bubble, I like this move. And I think the Blue Jays got the better player here.
In a vacuum, it's a slam dunk. Like Horwitz for Giménez, just on pure value, like in a vacuum, it's just you make this deal 100 times out of 100 for all the reasons you just said. And essentially, you're getting him on like a 5-year, $70 or $97 million deal, right? For the, for the time that you're going to have him, for what you're taking on from the Guardians. Like, this kind of deal, by the way, like, just screams of the Guardians being like, we need money right now. Like, we need this money today. Oh no. Like, we, you know, our regional sports network went bankrupt and MLB's gonna be broadcasting our team. And there goes our revenue stream, like a really big one for us. We need to move on from this today. So I think the Blue Jays were really opportunistic here in taking on this money. And, to your point, like, I think his floor as a player is like 2 to 3 wins, whereas that's like Spencer Horwitz's ceiling. So it's and you get Nick Sandlin in the deal as well. So like, to me, it just makes a ton of sense. And I think that Giménez, like you said, elite defender. He's going to make everybody on your pitching staff better. Everybody's ERA is going down because this guy is playing on your infield. He's going to make Bo Bichette better playing next to Bo, right? In the same way that Matt Chapman helped make Bo better, right? Yes. He's going to make Vlad better. We've seen Vlad get kind of a little too aggressive moving to his right from first base at times. Not going to have to do that anymore because Andrés Giménez is going to like get to everything. Offensively, what you're hoping is that you just saw his floor, is that the like 82 WRC plus last season was like his absolute floor, and that his true talent, well, certainly not the year that he got MVP votes, is like closer to the year prior when he was, you know, close to a league average player. Like, you're hoping that like the steamer projection of 103 weighted runs created plus is basically the true talent there. Because if you've got a league average hitter who plays elite defense like this, like you said, that's worth 20 million plus a year. Like, that's Dansby Swanson, that's, you know, Trevor Story. Like, these guys get paid if they are shortstops. You don't really see second basemen who are elite defensively league average hitters getting paid. you don't really see second baseman getting paid much in general, unless you're like a Marcus Semien, and you have like a really huge high upside bat and you can hit 40 homers a year.
Yeah.
For me, like the way this deal makes sense in the latter years, in 27, 28, 29, when it's like 22, 23 million per year, whatever it ends up being, is if Jimenez is a shortstop, bringing you elite defense and a league average bat, then it's just like, it's great value and it's better than what you'll be able to do on the open market. But if he's a second baseman throughout the deal for the next 5 years, I think it's actually an overpay.
Hmm. Interesting. I think it could be fine if he's a second baseman for the next 5 years. I think that it's very interesting that with Bo Bichette approaching free agency, they just acquired a player who certainly could slot in a couple years as a shortstop, or even if Bichette misses a month, right? It wouldn't be the first time that's happened at this point. If Bichette misses a month this year, now you have a couple options. It could be Yoni Clement, but what if Addison Barger's not hitting? You need Yoni Clement at third. Now you've got Jimenez at short, and second base is like David Schneider or Aroldis Martinez or Will Wagner or something. Like, that's just giving you more flexibility in the short term, but as well as, you know, a couple years down the road. I would expect that Jimenez will only become a worse defender as time goes on here. We'll see, but he is such a high level to come down from that that's okay. You can withstand some of that. And as for the offense, I mean, I'm taking the under on a 103 WRC plus next year. I don't necessarily think that his career year of 2022 is going to be repeated all that consistently. But, you know, maybe he's a 90 WRC plus player and great defense. And on the whole, he's still helping the team. My question largely is like connected to opportunity cost of that money, because it's a $20 million CBT hit, just shy of 20. I think it's like 19.3. That's the CBT hit. So then it's like, what does that mean for your pursuit of a power bat? Jock Peterson, Teoscar Hernandez, Anthony Santander, how do these guys fit? I think Jock is actually a great fit now that Spencer Horwitz has been traded, because those guys, there's a little redundancy there just from the handedness and the overall player profile. So I like Jock as a fit, but you know, if he's going to command 17, 18 million per season, then what does that mean for the rest of your team? Or conversely, on the pitching side, you go out, you sign a starting pitcher, boom, Nick Pivetta's a Blue Jay. That's great. But then that does that eat into what you can do elsewhere? So as much as I like this trade, I think it's a good trade. There are remaining questions that have yet to be answered for the Jays.
Yeah, on your first point, I mean, yeah, I'll take the under on Steamer's 103 weighted runs created plus projection as well. But like, I don't think it's as low as 91, 92. Like, he had a 96 in 2023, which to me is like a fair, you know, 95, 96 WRC plus is like a fair estimation of his true talent offensively, which in tandem with his defense that year made him a 4-win player. And he also hit 15 home runs, which like isn't nothing. And the other thing that he brings that isn't really getting talked about enough is that he immediately becomes the best base runner on the team, like by a substantial margin. And the Blue Jays were a terrible base running team last season, and the season prior to that as well. Like, the Blue Jays just need to be better at running the bases. I know it is a priority for them this offseason and what they're adding. Spencer Horwitz was the third worst Blue Jays base runner last season per StatCast, ahead of only Justin Turner and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. So two of those three now off the roster. Andrés Giménez, best base runner on the team, he's going to make the Blue Jays better in that regard as well. Now, to your latter point, because, you know, when we pull out of the vacuum of just this baseball deal and look at it in the context of the Jays offseason, like, you make a very good point. This restricts the Blue Jays financially in what they can do the rest of the season. Like, even unless your budget's a lot higher than we are presuming that it is, it almost makes like a Santander or a Hernandez, like a Teoscar, unrealistic, unless, you know, their markets aren't going to develop the way that we anticipate them developing. Like you were saying, like Teoscar or Santander might be like a 23 per season, and it looks like the Blue Jays may only have like $23 million left to spend. So like, I just think it's going to be impossible for them to address their need for power, their need for starting pitching, because their starting staff, as we talked about last time, projects by Steamer to be like the 25th in baseball. They need to add a starter. They need another leverage reliever. They need some more of those like bounce back relief types that I wrote about sportsnet.ca that you were talking about. I just don't see how they all get that done with the Jimenez money on the books. So to me, like, this is just further proof to me that the Blue Jays are trying to build a team that is going to be high walk, low strikeout, high contact, elite defense, better base running, and not the, you know, 920 homer hitters team that everybody wants to see. Like, I just don't think it goes back to that Don Mattingly quote from last year, 2 years ago, where he said, yeah, maybe we're just not this like mashing super, like maybe we don't win on home runs. Like, maybe that's not what we do. Yeah. Like, I don't think that's how the Blue Jays are building a team to win this year. They're building a team to win on contact and patience, defense, pitching, base running. Like, to me, that's how they're constructing their team to win, and Jimenez does fit in to that mold of the 2025 Blue Jays.
Yeah. And so how do they get here? Like, I don't think it's a philosophical hey, like, we're trying to forgo power, and we actually don't think that power is necessary. And I know there was that quote from Ross Atkins about it being low-hanging fruit, and well, now's probably the time to grab some, Ross. So, you know, we'll see where that goes. But I will say, like, in fairness to, you know, not just the Blue Jays, but executives around the game, like, they all want, you know, 30 homer hitters at every position. Like, yeah. Everyone wants the 400 OBP, 30 homer masher who's 23 years old and, you know, plays great defense. Of course. The reality is that for the non-Dodgers teams in baseball, you're pretty much looking at sacrifices somewhere. And so sometimes that means a really good defender who doesn't have power. Sometimes that means a really good power hitter who doesn't play defense. And, you know, the more flexibility you give yourself, the more players who can do all those things at once, then the better your team is going to be. But, you know, the Blue Jays are not in a position right now where they have players who can do it all. So they still need that power. They still need that starting pitching.
All right. So let's assume the Blue Jays have $20 to $23 million left to spend. How about I pitch you on a realistic offseason the rest of the way for the Blue Jays?
Let's hear it.
Max Kepler at a year, $12 million, because you can't afford Santander and do everything you want to do. You can't afford Teoscar and do everything you want to do. Kepler is like hitting the market off of a down year. If he was hitting the market off of his 23, like, he'd be in the conversation with Santander and Teoscar. Like, that was like a 123 WRC plus season with 24 homers. But he was hurt last year, a couple of knee issues, basically had like the worst season of his career. He needs like a short-term deal to reestablish value and prove that he can do it. Had like steady line drive and fly ball rates last year. Max exit velo of 115 plus, that is within the top 23 hitters in the sport. Pretty good bet for a bounce back, and you can get him on like what I would assume would be like a 1 year, $12 million deal. Maybe you'll disagree with that.
No, I agree.
And like, him and David Popkins, by the way, work together in Minnesota and have a prior relationship. So how do you feel about that as a first move to like get some pop into this lineup?
I want to hear the whole picture here.
Sure.
So I don't want to react too much, but I'll say as a starting point, I'm not pushing this away. I'm intrigued.
All right. And by the way, he also brings defensive value as well, like, good defender. So it's not like with a Jock Peterson where you can't play him in the field, or like a, I don't know who you would be like your first base type, but like somebody who you had to kind of like fit in to that picture. Like, this is somebody who you feel fine with throwing out in left or right field in Kepler. So I spent $12 million. Beyond that, like, I need like a legit back end guy. Like, I need somebody for leverage, but I can't afford Tanner Scott, and you know, I can't afford Nestevez. So I'm going to go with my boy Paul Sewald, who I made a case for last week, or last time we recorded, excuse me. Or I'm going to go with like Lucas Sims, who has incredible stuff. Huge strikeout rates. Like Stuff Plus considers his cutter the seventh best among MLB relievers, his sweeper the sixth best. He's had trouble with walks. Yes, he's got a pretty high ERA last year. He's given up a bunch of homers, but he's been pitching at Great American Ballpark, where the most homers are hit of any ballpark in baseball. And Sims is like an extreme fly ball guy who works up in the zone with you know, a riding fastball. So if I can get him out of Cincinnati, and probably, you know, help him just kind of find the edges of the zone a bit better, and maybe some pitch mix tweaks on like a 1 year, $4 million deal for him or for Paul Sewald, I feel like I've got another leverage arm.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Making sense here. I thought, the relievers that you identified in that piece were quite intriguing as a group.
Well, then I'll throw in another one. Hobie Milner, who the Blue Jays still need a lefty. Remember, they've like lost Tim Mesa. They've lost Yanisis Cabrera. Brendan Little's like the only lefty in their bullpen right now. It's him. And then like Brandon Isert is the next guy up. So I need another lefty. Milner's coming off of like a tough year in terms of like luck on balls in play. That's why he had like a 4.7 ERA. But his expected ERA was 3.15. His FIP was 3.14. Like everything was consistent with where he's been at in his career. 99th percentile barrel rate, 92nd percentile walk rate, 91st percentile ground ball rate. The problem was the batting average and balls in play and the home run per fly ball rate and the strand rates. So those are indicators they had a really unlucky year, and he should go back to being the guy who he's been in the past. And the lucky thing for the Blue Jays with Milner coming off of an unlucky year is perhaps you can get him on like a 1 year, $2 million deal.
Yeah, I am very convinced on Milner. That is the part that I'm like, go out and do that today because the other pieces will fit regardless. That's a good shout.
So I've spent $18 million and I have like, what, $2 or $3 million left to go? Assuming I want to leave a little bit of powder dry, right, at the end of the offseason. Yep. So I'm like, hey, can I get Spencer Turnbull to be a swingman for me at like $2 or $3 million? You know, he's a guy who hits his spots really well, was pitching really well through the first half of last season before he had a lat injury that ended his year. But like if he had sustained what he was doing over his first 54 innings, which was like a 2.65 ERA with a 26% strikeout rate, a 48% ground ball rate, I mean, that's somebody who would be looking at like a multi-year deal this offseason. Like that's somebody who would be doing a lot better than he will be, but he needs a little pillow contract to reestablish the value. So I'm trying to get him for like a year and you know, $2 to $3 million, probably with incentives there basically on appearances and innings pitched. So I'm now up to like $21-22 million. I've basically spent all my money. Now I'm just throwing out minor league deals with like $1 million guarantees if they make the roster, for basically guys with huge velo, like relievers with like just big time stuff. Trey Wingenter, Shintaro Fujinami, Jake Diekman, Keenan Middleton, anyone like that, and also minor league deals for hitters with pop. So Miguel Sano, Patrick Wisdom, Daniel Vogelback, Adam Duvall, Joey Gallo. Interest you in Josh Bell, you know, Brandon Drury.
Josh Bell, like, minor league deal. Wow.
Yeah, probably not. No, it's probably, that might be a little unrealistic. Joey Gallo, Adam Duvall, you know, Ramon Laureano, right? Like just hitters with pop who will take my money on minor league deals and come in and compete in camp and be this year's Vogelback, Eduardo Escobar. Pitchers with big velo, hitters with big pop, minor league deals, see who makes it in camp. So my rest of the Jays offseason is Kepler, one of Sewald or Sims, Milner, Turnbull, and then a bunch of minor league deals.
Do you think the Jays season ticket office will be able to handle the flood of requests that they get? Or maybe they'll have to staff up? Like, I don't know. I think I honestly, like, baseball wise, I follow your train of thought. And I think, like, if you were to do that, the biggest hole I'm seeing in what you're outlining right there is probably starting pitching, because going into the offseason, my impression was the Blue Jays really wanted to add a starting pitcher if at all possible. And, you know, that that might be the weakness. But one way or another, you do this exercise, you are going to have weaknesses. And I'll throw one at you here in a second. But yeah, I think overall that makes sense.
I think, you know, Turnbull could be that starter. Obviously, Ariel Rodriguez still in the conversation. You're hoping that like a Jake Bloss or an Adam Macko is ready to contribute. You really just need to like paper over the first half of the year before Alek Manoah is ready to come back. And I don't know, maybe you go grab Wes Parsons on a minor league deal. Maybe he helps.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, stranger things have happened. All right. So here's what I would suggest. Again, this is with the assumption that the Blue Jays have something like $24 million remaining to spend. And that's not to sit here and endorse that. It's not to say that they wouldn't be a lot more fun if they spent $300 million. We're just trying to read the tea leaves and be somewhat realistic, because it's just probably just less useful if we sit here and say, yeah, they should sign Corbin Burns and Alex Bregman. Because, okay, sure, that's a little bit, you know, beside the point. So if we're working under that assumption, then I'm going to toss out Jerickson Profar, 14 AAV. You know, this is, you're waiting things out a little bit. You're probably not getting that deal today, but maybe in January you get him on 14 times three. You know, that's not a bad deal for a player who can help you. Then you toss in Mike Soroka as, you know, at $8 million. I don't know if you can get him for that, but let's say you can get him for $8 million. Canadian guy, of course, Calgary's own Mike Soroka. Finished with the White Sox in the bullpen. Amazing, amazing results in relief. I think you stretch him out in spring training, you just kind of see. If he's really thriving in a three-inning role, then great, you stretch him to four. Maybe he's a starting pitcher for you. If the three innings isn't working so well, you take him back, dial him back to one, two innings. He's a reliever for you, and you're probably rolling with Yariel Rodriguez in the bullpen, or in the rotation with Soroka in the bullpen. But that's a little upside shot on a dude who finished really strong. And if anyone's going to take a hometown discount, it might be him. And then you've got Hobie Milner. I'm sold. I'm sold by your sales pitch there. So I would toss him in at $2 million. So you go 14 plus 8 plus 2. There's your 24, and of course some minor league deals thrown in. But that would be a way to augment the position player group. You know, you still are left without a cleanup hitter, but it's a better offense. It's a better position player group that way. It's a better pitching staff that way. The headlines probably aren't too exciting, but that's probably a pathway that would make the Jays better than they are today.
In this scenario, you kind of need Hobie Milner to be a leverage reliever, is the thing. If Soroka's right, like kind of a swingman for you. And I don't know that Hobie Milner's a leverage reliever. I like him in the Tim Mazur role, where it's like sixth inning, you know, fireman type of deal, come get you out of a jam, right? Target a pocket of lefties. But if it comes down to it and it's like, you know, the eighth inning and Eric Swanson isn't available and Chad Green's on the IL and Jimmy Rodriguez is your closer, so you're going to like Hobie Milner in the eighth inning against, you know, however the Yankees are going to be lining up the heart of their batting order this year. I don't know how confident you are.
Well, ultimately, if the Jays are going to have a good season next year, which, you know, the thesis of this podcast might be that that's an uphill battle at this point. But, you know, if they are going to have a good season, they probably need a lot of things to go right unexpectedly. And, you know, maybe one of them is a, you know, Hobie Milner or Brendan Little comes, you know, they're getting big outs for you. Maybe it's an Alan Roden hits 280. Maybe it's Aroldis Martinez hits 15 bombs. Maybe it's all of those things. And Leo Jimenez has a two war season. Like, for them to get to where they need to go, like, they're going to have to be some kind of surprises in the course of this season.
Yeah. You know, even in my construction with like Kepler and Milner and whatnot, I've only added like four wins really to the team. And for you, between Profar, Soroka, Milner, maybe also four, right? If you think
maybe.
Like
mine might be a, yeah.
It might be lower, right? You might be three and a half, right? Like, so let's say we've averaged 3.5 between our two proposals, and then let's put Jimenez down for 3.5 as well. Does that seem reasonable? Yeah. It's a good outcome, but seems reasonable. So there's 7 wins above replacement, and let's say, so they've also added Garcia and Sandlin. Let's give those guys one win, right, between them.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, aggressive, but still. The Blue Jays won 72 games last year, was it?
74.
So we're now up to 82 which is not good enough. And we spent all of our money. So we're going to need to find like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 more wins from internal improvement and good developmental stories and finding little edges with our deployment in terms of like pitcher usage and our batting order and our defensive positioning. Luck. And hopefully we've got some powder dry for like deadline additions to squeeze out the final win or two that we need at the end of the year. But even with these two sort of scenarios we've laid out, we're still needing a lot of things to go right in other areas of the formula.
Yeah, which is why fundamentally the New York Yankees aren't waking up petrified of the Toronto Blue Jays today, nor the Boston Red Sox. Like they're just not. That could change within 6 months because baseball is totally wild and surprises us every single year. Doesn't mean the surprises will be good for the Blue Jays, but you know, they could be. We don't know. I'm always intrigued to find out. Yeah, they've got a lot to do. They've got still a lot of work to do on this roster.
All right. There is a super size podcast for everybody to listen to over the holidays with plenty to chew on as we turn the calendar on 2024, head into 2025. Spring training just around the corner, just a couple of months until it's Dunedin and Grapefruit League games. And 6 weeks of spring training in which we will talk about a whole lot of things that probably won't really even end up mattering all that much at all come July and August and September and October. But that's where we are right now. I want to thank everybody for listening all year, for tweeting at Ben incessantly.
It's
just asking him why he is ruining everything.
These are good questions. Why have I not somehow from my position as a writer somehow made the Blue Jays better? This is I would be the first writer to ever have any influence on roster construction to that extent.
Please keep it up. But I know I speak for Ben when I say thank you all for listening, and it's very appreciated that you're reading and engaging and listening and with us throughout the season, because it makes it more fun for us.
100%. Definitely agree with that. Thank you to everyone for listening.
Hope everyone has a great holidays, is safe and happy, and a great beginning to their 2025. Want to thank our producers, Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. They do hard work all year, and we are very appreciative of it. He's Ben Nixon Smith. I'm Arden Zwelling. We'll talk to you in 2025 on At the Letters.